The Tantrum House Board Game Podcast is recorded live from Studio WKRB in Greenville, South Carolina. This podcast is brought to you by our friendly local game store, Boardwalk, purveyors of fine games, Bezier Games, the new classics, Final Frontier Games, bringing friends and families closer together, The Game Steward, your second chance at Kickstarter games, and Game Toppers LLC, upgrading your gaming experience. Your hosts are Prognosticator Supreme, peering into the swirling mist of future Kickstarters and glimpsing the diamonds in the rough. So buckle up, seriously, especially if you're driving right now, because you're about to arrive at the Tantrum House.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the show. Today we've got Jonah Dew,
Sarah Meadows,
Kevin Delp,
Melissa Delp,
Ryan Pills,
and Apprentice Dan
in the house. We are so excited, like always, to have you join us for our weekly Tantrum House podcast. Today we're going to start off with talking about some of the games that we've got to the table here this last week. So what do we got? What do we play?
Melissa and I were able to play Beyond the Sun from Rio Grande Games. And this is a, what kind of game would you call it, Melissa? Worker placement in a way?
Yes, it has a little bit of worker placement. You have one action cylinder that you're going to be moving around, putting on different action spaces. But other players' cylinders are going to block some of those spaces. So, yeah, it has a little bit of that.
And it's got a tech tree, so which is the major part of the game where you're actually trying to gain the right items in order to move up that tech tree to reveal new cards that you'll have access to if you're able to unlock those different spots in the tech tree. And the higher up you go, the way better those cards are, and even like rewards you get.
Right, and they may open up more action spaces that people can go to, but you can only go to those spaces if you've researched that technology. So someone goes to the space, researches it to uncover the technology, and then other people, if they think, ooh, I'd like that, they have to go research it as well.
But this is a sci-fi themed game, and there is some space exploration going on as well. And there's another whole board that you are moving your ships around that you're able to unlock by going up the tech tree and doing other things. And you are placing out like these plants and technology. I'm not sure exactly. It was like
So you have these outposts. Discs, and as you gain control of a system, you can place one of your outpost discs on it, and the disc is then uncovering your production of either your population or ore. So as you're able to put out these discs, then when you produce, you're getting better benefits. But other people can come in with their ships and have more control and then kind of kick you out. So then they take control of the system. You can also colonize them and get the cards, and that gives you points and a special benefit as well.
Yeah, I definitely want to play this one again. It seemed really meaty and crunchy Euro. So, yeah. That is Beyond the Sun from Rio Grande Games. Who else? Ryan?
Yeah, I finally got a chance to play Four Humors. I know a bunch of us played it like a week ago or so, but I didn't. So
we talked about that a little bit in the last episode,
yeah.
Right?
So yeah. I finally got to play it.
Cool.
It was pretty fun. I won't rehash everything.
That's okay.
But we do have an overview up now, and by the time this airs, we'll have a playthrough that we're going to be doing, so go check that out. I didn't get to play these, but I have three games set in the Warhammer 40K universe, and they all have these really interesting miniatures that they're glueless. They're all on sprues, and you have to like pop them out and
pop them in.
Yeah, pop them together, and they all they fit in together really securely.
Have you tried putting some of them together?
Yeah,
and
with varying success.
Okay,
I think it depends on the production run. Some of them were a lot easier to pop out than others. It also depends on how delicate the miniature is. I may have wrecked a bow and ripped off something's leg. But
legs?
Yeah, it was like this Sphinx creature or whatever. I am using a knife to like cut through the sprues, and I think I just applied too much force.
So you can
the horrors.
Yeah, but so, the miniatures of the little space marines themselves, they turned out pretty well.
and you're able to glue some of this back together.
Yeah, or? I'm definitely going to glue it back together. They have some guides on how to pop paint them. Out. So I might try to persuade Katie to paint them.
Okay.
So we'll see.
And maybe in the future we'll see like a big overarching video of some of these. Cool.
Yeah, that should be fun.
Or we should have a video of Ryan trying to like pop. That would be fun to watch.
Yeah.
That'll get the views right there.
People will get to see how frustrated I can become.
Yep. Oh, blood.
This is my first foray into the Warhammer universe. Okay. So
cool.
It's interesting.
I played, apparently, I didn't know this was old, but Turn the Tide.
I heard of it.
I guess it was made in 1997, but I just played it on Board Game Arena today. And it's by the same people who did For Sale.
Oh, I like For Sale.
Yeah, so it's got kind of a bidding mechanic where you're trying not to have the highest tied number goes 1 through 10, and you all have your own hand of, I think, 10, 12 cards, depends on the player count. And you select, there will be two cards there, so like maybe a 5 and a 10 for the tied. Whoever's the highest bid gets the lower of the two numbers, and then whoever's the second highest bid gets the highest number.
Oh, interesting.
But then if you have the highest number out of everyone on the table, you lose a life preserver. And if you ever lose all of your life preservers, you die. But you do this in...
Do you die or do you drown?
Well, isn't that the same thing?
Yeah, but Turn the Tide and losing a life preserver.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Okay. So you would die for that round, but you play...
Drown, okay.
You play 5 or 6 rounds, again, depends on player count. The interesting thing to me was when I play all of my cards, so let's say we play 10, the next round, my hand, exactly as I had it, goes to the person on my left. We all rotate the same hands. So if you're really paying attention, you know, okay, Jonah has the 60 now. That's the high card. So you can kind of watch for that. And then as that goes around the table, you know where those hands are going to be. So adds a little bit of different strategy to it and seeing how people play it. And it was a lot of fun. It's pretty quick, maybe a 20, 25 minute game. So if you like For Sale, it's probably something that you'd be into. Apparently it's 1997. So most of you have already probably played it, but really fun. So yeah, check that out. Turn the Tide.
Okay, you guys are going to laugh at me, but I finally played Hues and Cues.
Oh, cool.
This last week. I hadn't played it. I know it's so popular and everyone loves it, but I hadn't played it. And I've discovered that I'm so bad at this game. So bad.
Like, which kind? Like describing or guessing?
Yes. Describing. No, I can guess. Okay. I can guess because other people are good. So therefore, I can guess. No problem. I really was questioning myself. Like second round through, am I colorblind? Like I really had to take a moment. I stopped the game and I just kind of went through the board and kind of like said what colors were here to make sure that all the other people were seeing the same colors I was.
I gotcha.
They were making fun of me so much and I didn't know. I was just so bad. So this one particular clue was like a robin's egg. And I thought, or maybe I don't know. Whatever clue it was, I thought it was like a pale-ish color. And I just thought for certain I had it. Like, I got this exactly correct. This has to be the color they were giving. And everyone else was, like, way further away from me. And I'm, like, by myself with my two guesses. And then it turns out that they were like, what color are you thinking it is? And it was just so bad. I'm equally as bad at Hues and Cues as any drawing game. It's so terrible. I lost very badly. We played twice. I lost. I was just in the back, like so far in the back.
Well, Kevin and I, at least when we played, have decided that the greens and the blues are some of the hardest because
there's so much variation.
Yeah. But we don't really have a lot of words in our vocabulary to distinguish the different colors in that spectrum.
That is very true. There are other cultures that, like, we have red, and light red we call pink. We have different words for lots of different pinks, like magenta.
Yeah.
We do not have words for all the different blues that are normal. Like, we have blue, and we have light blue.
And like, I'm kind of surprised, playing as many times as I've had played it now, there's a lot of colors that aren't on the board. There's not a lot of browns on the board.
Yes.
There's just a dark brown. There's not a lot of like light tans or like flesh colors or things like that on the board. And I.
So those are easier because basically if you get them in the right area,
yeah.
They're all going to be close.
If you're like, you know, whatever, you know, mahogany or wood or whatever, and like, oh, it's got to be right there. It's got to be up in that corner.
Yep.
So anyway, it was interesting playing as many times of a hat as I have now.
Yes. So. Well, that also, your card has four choices. So. Mm-hmm. You can choose to stay away from some of those
right, but difficult colors. If you want people to guess, then you might as well make it easy, and everyone gives you like 40 points.
Yeah.
Not that many points. But.
I had a game that I ended up losing this weekend as well. I got
Once
to play, I know, I got to play Wavelength with Chris Goodlett on his charity Boardgamer Twitch channel this weekend. There's a fundraiser for Extra Life, and we had a good group of us playing Wavelength. All of the clues, except for the last one, the other team had got exactly right every time. And I think we missed one, and that ended up losing the game for us.
That's so were impressive. They cheating?
No, they just gave really good clues, and a lot of us thought they were wrong at where they put the marker, and it ended up being exactly right. So you can head over to the Charity Board Gamer Twitch channel, and you can go back and rewatch that. Chris did 24 hours straight of gaming himself on the channel and raised quite a bit of money for the charity. So
cool.
Props to him.
I want to throw one more out there that I played this weekend. Didn't think about it. Have you guys played The Chameleon?
I believe we have.
I have not.
I think
I have not either.
I know Ryan definitely has.
I have one and two, and I just haven't been able to.
That was surprisingly fun. And just the concept is one of you is the chameleon, and the other three all know what the answer is to the clue. But then, you know, depending on who the first player is, you have to throw out a one-word clue to everybody to try and prove that you're either – that you're on the right team. And then the chameleon is listening, not knowing what the answer is, and trying to piece together what everyone else is saying and also give their clue without being caught as the chameleon. And it was a lot of fun. There's, you know, bluffing.
I'm interested.
And, yeah, bluffing. There's some deduction there. Amy, my wife, was playing, and out of seven rounds, first time playing, she was the chameleon five times.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
And I think two of those times she was the first player. So, like, that's really tough because at the first time, you're looking at a grid of 16 different things, and you have to try and figure out what can I throw out there that's generic enough to cover a lot of these things that won't give me away as the chameleon. And it's interesting as you listen through that. And
it reminds me a little bit of like games like Spyfall.
Yeah,
things like that,
definitely.
Because it has that sort of hidden information.
Yeah.
But you're trying to say that I'm part of the group and things like that.
Spyfall's more pictures, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So I would say this is very similar to Spyfall, just with words.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But that was a lot of fun. It was neat to get in to try something different like that.
Melissa and I played a game from WizKids called Gates of Mara, M-A-R-A. And this is a worker placement area majority game where on your turn you're placing out one of your workers out on this rondelle type board, not a rondelle, like a round board.
Yeah, there's different realms,
yeah,
and
locations.
They're just in a circle.
Yeah, but it's a modular board, so every game's going to be different because it's those locations can change, and even the different beings. What are they called? Forget spirit. The gods. The
right.
Basically they are. Elemental beings, something like
elemental
that.
Elemental lords,
yeah.
I think.
They're traveling around too. Anyway, the interesting thing about this worker placement game is that your workers are on standees, and your standee is different shapes on the bottom. So there's squares and triangles and circles, and where they go, they can only go in certain spots around the board, and that is...
The shapes correspond to the type of worker it is, so you have like merchants and champion...
Okay.
And enchanters and things like that. So every player's merchant is on a circular base, and they can go on the spots that have the circle symbol on them. So you might have a spot that three of your types of workers can go on, but two of them can't.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's some definitely throughout the game, there's the area majority of where you're going to place your workers in limited spots. And then not only that, but you are able to upgrade your workers by gaining cards throughout the game. So, oh, this guy is going to be able to get a card. Oh, I'm going to put him on a different worker so that later, even that turn or that round, I'll be able to have that upgraded action, which is so. I think every worker can hold like one or two of these banners. And by the end of the game, some of them are pretty powerful, which is it's kind of fun. I like to play it with this. I played it with Melissa, so it was only a two-player game. So as an area majority, I felt like, oh, I can see this being much better at a higher player count.
Right. Yeah, I definitely want to try it with more players. Other interesting thing is that the different workers have different costs associated with them. So some of the really powerful ones, you have to pay more energy. So you're deciding, how much energy do I want to spend? Some of the actions cost energy. So you are planning out how to use your resources that you get during the game.
Yeah. So that's Gates of Mara from WizKids. Anyone else? Why don't we do a shout out to our episode sponsors?
This episode is sponsored by Dreamcraft Games. Their game USS Freedom is coming to Kickstarter this week. It is a cooperative game that has a bit of a campaign in it, and you are roaming space in your spaceships. And we'll talk about this a little bit more in our Kickstarter conniption.
Well, let's jump into our Kickstarter conniption.
Kickstarter conniption.
This episode will be talking about seven games coming to Kickstarter the week of November 16th, 2020. Kevin, start us off.
Our first game this week is coming from Game Brewer. This is coming November 16th. The game is called Rule Benders. For 3 to 5 players, takes about 45 to 75 minutes. The higher the player count, is definitely going to make the game go a little bit longer. This has card drafting, hand management. It's got area majority definitely in the game. And on your turn, you're basically can play a card from your hand. You could place a area majority cube out on the board. The interesting thing about this game is there's different themes, and there's like I think four realms.
There's four different themed cards that you can use to manipulate the game. There's fantasy and prehistoric and Middle Eastern.
And that's just in our prototype.
Yeah, that's just. I think there will be six.
Yeah. I think in a game you play with four, which are basically each of those themes. That deck of cards, and there's a middle deck that's sort of like generic.
Yeah.
And on your turn, you can play a card, like I said, play a cube out, or there's even ways to get more cards throughout the game. So where you can even play cards is determined on how you are going around the different spots on the different locations.
Yeah, there's basically a bunch of different boards with different rules on them. And throughout the game, certain players can adjust those rules that will affect everybody, but then there's also ways for you to move your tokens, so the rules are slightly different for you. It might be a little better or it might be a little worse, like how many cards you can draw, how many cubes you get, which themed cards you can play. All of that is being adjusted on those boards throughout the game.
Yep. Each round you will adjust the board at the end of the round once everybody has played, and everyone will have consequences for what happened in that round. So very interesting.
And I would say that it felt, I sort of was really delving into just two of the themes. One was the prehistoric, and the other one I really went after was the pirate ones. And it did seem pretty thematic with what those cards were doing in the game, whether it was attacking another player or even defending based on attacking if people were trying to attack me. I really went heavy on the cubes. I thought I was doing really well, and then I figured out it just wasn't about getting cubes, which is important in the game, but really important was getting credits. because credits are what actually win you the game, the number of credits you have. And Sarah really went heavy on credits that last round, which I should have done as well, but I didn't.
Yeah, I had a very, very slow start.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that I was going to be way behind. But then the last round, because I had gone negative on a lot of the tracks instead of positive, and I had been hurting myself the whole game, there were some end game bonuses, that cards that I was able to get credits for right at the end,
mm-hmm.
For being really low on the tracks. So it ended up giving me a win, which I was surprised about too.
We will have a playthrough video of this already up on our channel. So definitely check out Rule Benders from Game Brewer coming this week. Melissa.
On the 17th, we have Mission Catastrophe coming from Cardboard Alchemy. This is a new publishing company, but it has been started by several people who have been in the industry for many years and worked on many games. So new company, but not necessarily new faces in this. This game is for 1 to 6 players and plays in about 30 to 60 minutes. Basically, you are crew members on a deep space mining vessel, and everything's going wrong. So you are flaming, going through space because the asteroid you're mining has turned into a high velocity flaming death, basically, and it's coming towards your ship.
Sounds like fun.
So this is a bit of a not necessarily last man standing, but first one who can get off the ship without the ship completely blowing up. You can have a game where everyone dies. If you don't work together a little bit, this is not a cooperative game. So only one person will win. But if every person does their own thing, the ship's going to completely fall apart.
So is this you're working sort of together, but you're doing your own thing? Or are you trying to shove people down the wrong path or knock them out or anything like that?
There's a little bit of both of those.
Okay.
You have different spots in your ship, different rooms, and they can go offline. They can lose oxygen. They each have powers, but if they start getting damaged, those powers don't work anymore. And if you don't have a spacesuit, you can't go in areas without oxygen.
Or you die.
So sometimes it's advantageous to fix a room because you really need to be able to use the power. You have to collect certain cards, and some of those cards are in certain rooms. So if you lose power to that room, you can't draw the cards that you need to then get off the ship. So there is a little bit of, oh, I hope Kevin goes and wastes his turn fixing that area so I can swoop in.
I won the first game handily because everyone else on the that was playing was all fixing the ship, and I was just like, I'm just going to get all the stuff I need to get off the ship. The second game we played, everyone lost because every bid for himself and didn't fix the ship, and the ship got destroyed.
So we haven't played it yet, but there is a cooperative mode and a 2v2
V2
mode.
We should try that out next Thursday.
Or it'll be in the past.
No, it'll be in the future because
it'll
be this coming Thursday. And I think we could do it because I think we'll all be here with the other game. So that might be fun.
So we are going to have a playthrough. We're still figuring out which versions we're going to play. The free-for-all, cooperative,
2v2v2. Yeah, yes, gotta do that
2v2v2.
Yes. That'd be fun, three teams of two.
Yeah, and each player has a special power, so it's asymmetric powers with your characters. And then, it's a bit of a little bit of mayhem as you're going through the ship and rolling dice to see which areas get hit by asteroid pieces and things like that. And you hope it's not the one that you're in.
Cool.
That was Mission Catastrophe coming on the 17th. Ryan.
Also coming the 17th is Hibachi from Grail Games. This is a rework of the game Saffronito from about 10 years ago. It was a Spiel des Jahres recommended game. It has some clout, a good heritage. In the game, there's a dexterity element to it where there's a bunch of ingredients out on the table, and you have these poker chip like coins that you're chucking at certain ingredients, and depending on what ingredients they land on, tells you what you can buy or sell or what actions you can take. And you are trying to collect the ingredients needed to fulfill orders, and whoever completes the first three orders wins the game. And apparently it's pretty great. Other people at this table
we can
have
talk
played
about
it. I have not. So you can tell
what
me
what are you
how
talking about for,
was.
Ryan?
I played it twice, I think. I played half of it twice, maybe.
No, we played a full game with
oh,
with
yeah,
me.
Yeah, we did. It's fun. I enjoy it. It's yeah. fun to flick them. Kevin cheats. You're not supposed to let your hand cross the board.
Hey, halfway through the game, we figured it out, and I stopped cheating.
And Kevin was like dropping them on the ingredients he needed. Yeah, it was yeah. a whole thing.
It's not a crane. You can't just
right. You got to flick them. They slide pretty well, and they're different values. And it's I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it looks cool. I like this theme better than the Saffronito theme. I mean, it looks a lot sharper to me. So. If it's of interest to you, check it out. November 17th. Dan, what do you got?
Also coming November 17th, we have USS Freedom by Dreamcraft Games. It's a 1-6 player, about an hour long game. It is spacefaring. You are out there exploring. It's really meant to be kind of an open sandbox, open world. Do whatever you want and have different encounters as you go along the way. Trying to accomplish certain objectives. There are going to be different alien worlds that you'll interact with, and they might be friendly towards you. They might try and attack you. It all really depends on those encounter cards as they come up. So in addition to having the encounters, you then have heroes, and depending on that encounter, let's say you go to combat, you might go down to the alien world and do combat with the aliens. They might attack you on your ship out in space, and so you do combat on your ship. So you've got one board that's kind of the interstellar map of where all the planets are as you travel around, and there are different spaceships that you might come in contact with, or they might attack each other. And everything you do can raise your reputation with that alien race, or it can cause it to go down. Say if you attack them, you'll lose reputation with them. It had a little bit of a feel to me of like a Star Trek meets Mass Effect, in that you're out exploring, but then you have kind of these side objectives that come up and you're attacking, or they're asking you to do something for them and they'll pay you if you do it. But it kind of seems like some of what you do will have consequences as you progress throughout the game. And it's meant to be, you sit down and you play for about an hour, and that's one mission out of a greater campaign. And so then you could choose, hey, let's just do another encounter, and that's another mission. And you're doing all these things so that you can work towards one final goal. And they have a saving system so that as you play one, if you just don't have time, you can mark where you were, you save all the necessary materials, and you just keep going the next time you come to play. So a pretty slick system. Ryan, you at least got to see the game on the table. What'd you think of what you saw?
Yeah, I thought it looked really cool. I liked how the characters that you play with are all kind of in jokes, where they all seem to be references. Some of them might be new entirely, but most of the ones that I saw seem to hearken to some sort of pop culture. So there was like a Merlin type character.
Star Trek.
An officer who looks like he's Captain Kirk or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it is USS Freedom, and then kind of the subtitle is Cosplay Heroes, I think. So
there was obviously like a Doctor Strange sorcerer.
Yeah.
And this kid that looks like Harry Potter.
A Lara Croft lookalike. Yeah. Yeah, so you've got a lot of different things going on.
What are they doing in space?
I don't know. They are out there. You are out there.
Does it matter?
That's right. You're trying to fight off the big bad dudes. It really looks like there's a lot to the game, because you've got some missions that alien races want you to do, where it's like you have to obliterate the Destroyer of Worlds, which is kind of this entity that eats worlds. But so you could head down that path. Other ones want you to make money, and they'll reward you for doing that. So you have, I want to say, 11 different objectives that you could do, and you could choose, okay, we basically want to eliminate everybody else, so we're going to follow this objective. But the next campaign you do, you want to be friends with everybody. So you can get into trading, you can get into combat. There's a lot of different options available as you play this game. Again, that's USS Freedom on November 17th. Jonah, what are you looking at?
Yeah, on November 18th, Levitation Masters of Magic is heading to Kickstarter. That's by publisher Joe Magic Games. So I've actually gotten this game to the table a few times. This table, this game is all about you're a magician and you're trying to learn different illusions that give you special abilities for when you play the game. So the game's actually pretty interesting. It had a few kind of mechanics, I guess, that I just wasn't. I didn't think they would lump them together. So basically in the game, you roll like 20 to 25 die.
Whoa.
And then you assign five and sixes to one specific illusionist, which is an action. Threes and fours to a different guy who's an illusionist and an action. And ones and twos to a third person.
Are there different types of magicians, like stage magicians, side of hand magicians, or...
That's a good question.
Okay.
I think that they're all stage magicians. Okay. It's all illusion-based, because you have to go to different cities and perform your tricks or try to purchase the tricks, basically, and then those give you special abilities.
Because magicians are all, they're all types of magicians out there.
Oh, I agree.
As the resident.
As the resident magician?
Yeah.
Okay,
Continue on. I'm interested. Then, you piqued my interest.
Oh, I should have brought it. We should play it. I've played it a few times. Okay. It's pretty fun. Okay, so then whatever color die you pull off that action, that magician. So first you get to do their action, whatever it is, and then that color die tells you which color illusion you can basically take off the board, and that also activates any illusions you've also taken off the board, but only of that color die. So you're trying
to... So you're rolling dice, which is random.
Yep.
And then you're choosing one of those three magicians.
Yep.
And you really want to do the ones that have the color that you really want.
Exactly.
But you might not have a lot of dice in that.
Right.
Oh, man. Right. Some tension there.
Yep. So then there's it's like color based on those die to allow you to do your actions. And the actions are pretty cool. Like,
pull a dove out of a hat.
Well, they're not magic tricks. The illusions all have, they have what the trick is and where it originated, like on the card and stuff. Oh, cool. So that's pretty fun. Okay. But the actions in the game for like those abilities that they give you are like switch abilities and go to a different city and get in game points and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So the game really is based on, you can get a few points during your turn, like two or three or four, but really it's all kind of working up to this huge in game bonus that you're kind of working toward all game. So there's a bunch of in-game like tokens and bonuses that you can get like one time. There's a bunch of stuff that you kind of just work for.
Is it the same every game, or do they change those end-game stuff?
The end-game stuff is going to be the same every game.
Okay.
But the illusions are, there's like a bunch of illusions. There's only room for, I don't know, 10 on the board, and you're only ever going to like replenish maybe 5 or 6 or 7 of them. Mm-hmm. But the game comes with maybe, you know, 50 or something. Okay. So it is has a lot of replayability in that way. But anyway, that is Levitation Masters of Magic coming to Kickstarter on November 18th. Sarah, what game do you have?
Coming November 17th is Creature Conference from Kids Table Board Gaming. This is a family weight worker placement game where you are in charge of a family of animals, so like a family of foxes or rabbits, little woodland creatures, and you will be placing your workers out on the board to collect resources that you can make into little comforts for your little den that you live in. In the game, you have two of your own family dice that you'll roll, and you'll get to see what those are, and then you'll place your workers out. And then there are four community dice that get rolled afterwards. So there'll be spaces on the board that give you wood or stones from the river, but they all need very specific dice. And so some of the spaces may be like you need three dice that equal over 11 and you'll have to total up three dice to get that. But you don't know what the community dice will be because they're rolled afterwards. So there's a little bit of hoping and planning. There's ways to mitigate if you don't get what you need from the dice roll. But in the game, you can, you're just gaining points based on what you have collected for all of these different resources spent to gain these comforts. And you're making things like pots of soup or knitting little stockings for your baby raccoons, you know, things like that. It's super cute art. The game is designed by Roberta Taylor, and Shauna Tenney did the artwork for it, and it's super cute. My kids and I have played this one, and it's one that doesn't require much reading, so my 8-year-old, who's not a strong reader, was able to play, and he actually beat some of us adults with pretty much no help. I mean, there was help on reading the cards, and that was about it.
Cool.
So he was very ecstatic that he beat the adults and his older brother.
Yeah.
So you can check out our overview video of this game on our channel, and there will also be several playthroughs. I'll be in one with several other women in the board gaming industry. Helena Capel will be there. Mandy from Dice Tower, Biba, and a couple others. So it'll be a fun playthrough. We're doing that on Thursday after or before this launch. Yeah, before this launches. So you can check out some things. You can go back and check it out on Tabletop Simulator if you want a chance to take a look at the game and play it yourself. Kevin has one more.
Yes. Academy Games is launching Reality Shift this week. This is for 2 to 4 players. Takes about 15 to 40 minutes to play, depending on probably the number of players and how fast you can win the game, because this is a grid movement type game where everyone's in charge of their own light bike and they're racing along the track trying to get to the finish first. But this isn't just any normal track. These are 3D cubes that can be moved and rotated and adjusted throughout the whole game as you're playing cards from your hand in order to adjust them, and as you're playing cards from your hand to move your light bike. There's also a die that's being rolled that can also help move your light bike. And these light bikes are not only moving along the track, they're magnetic. So as you're moving your light bike along these 3D cubes, your light bike is on the side or on top, or could get crushed as cubes are being moved. So there, it is definitely a spatial thinking game as you're trying to move your light bike the fastest and in the correct route, because all the cubes have different track configurations. So Melissa's played this with me.
Yes, we played it with some kids, some boys, probably about 8 to 10 years old, mm-hmm. and they really enjoyed the 3D nature of it.
They enjoyed the crashing and crushing.
Yes, they enjoyed being able to play cards that move the cubes in order to crash other people's bikes.
Oh, yeah.
But this is a very different type of game for Academy Games, because they're known more for their historical mm-hmm. games and a lot of fighting, like battle type games,
military games. Sure.
So this was very different, but it was fun, especially to play with the boys.
Yeah, definitely a lighter type game, but I really like these 3D cubes are like 4 inches by 4 inches, so they're not small little cubes. I mean, they're pretty hefty, yeah. And it's like a 3x3 grid, so nice size board. And yeah, it's a quick playing game, like I said earlier, and it's for 2 to 4 players. This is Reality Shift, coming this week from Academy Games. I believe every game that we talked about tonight, we will have some sort of video on our channel. So if you are interested in any of the games that we talked about, whether it's a playthrough or an overview, definitely see what we did and talked about it on our YouTube channel. That wraps up our Kickstarter conniption. Sarah, did you get your geek gold?
I did. So I don't actually post a lot on Board Game Geek. I do use a lot of the other resources on there, but I'm not making posts personally because Will edits the videos that we create. And so he ends up uploading them using his account, which is fine. But I've struggled because I never have geek gold. So I can't even get, like, I had to, like, do a couple extra things to get Geek Gold to even put the Tantrum House micro badge on my profile. And Kevin's like, oh, I got plenty of Geek Gold. I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, I have 490. And here I am trying to find ways. I was like, oh, I get three bonus ones at the end of the year. Like, I'm saving up all year to pay for these micro badges just so you guys can find me better with
you,
the Tantrum House.
If you're listening
logo.
And you're in dire need of Geek Gold, just hit me up on Board Game Geek and I'll help you out. So, yes. Cool. We got other videos that are coming this week. Check out our Saturday morning board game show coming Saturday morning. Usually we go live at 11 a.m. Eastern time. And we have some other videos that are coming out this week. So definitely check those out on our YouTube channel. Most of them are going to be the games that we talked about, though, on today's show. So,
yeah, we do have a lot of playthroughs, like I think we said last time, coming up. So those most of the time are scheduled on Tuesdays and Thursday evenings. Mm-hmm. So if you want to hang out and watch us play some games and chat in the comments, we'd love to have you.
Cool. All right. Well, oh, one more thing. We have nailed down the dates for Tantrum Con Digital, our virtual convention. We have talked about this in the past, but that it was coming. The dates are February 5th and 6th of 2021. So it was the same weekend of what our physical convention would have been that weekend. So definitely put that on your calendar to come. Join us digitally on your computers February 5th and 6th, and we'll be playing games with you, because that's one of the main things that we want to do with this convention is to play with you.
I think everyone will be surprised at the level of awesomeness that Will has been working on. Mm-hmm. He's already spent hours and hours planning and prepping. Our entire living room was just cables and cords everywhere, trying to plan out how people can actually like call in or Zoom in or mm-hmm. be a live part of the show with us.
Yep.
So we're still working out all the details for that. But
was
it's
it Saturday?
Gonna
we
be...
did Saturday. We did a little test yes, run on some things.
We did, so, and
it had some success and some
yeah, some things we needed to figure
definitely.
Out. And
but
and
that's why we're working on it now.
Yes, we're planning months in advance so that our digital event will be spectacular.
And if you are a board game publisher, you can definitely check out. We have sponsorship opportunities. You can email me, kevin@tantrumhouse.com. That's kevin@tantrumhouse.com. And we can talk more about that.
Yep, but I am looking forward to it. There's some digital events have been, I think, a little lackluster this year. Compared to being with all your friends, it's hard to compare. Mm-hmm. Being with all your friends in person, staying up late, playing games all day long. It's hard to compare being away from everybody else, but we're hoping to try and bridge that gap with some additional video work for this one. So we'll cool. see if it turns out okay.
Cool. And if you have any ideas, definitely email us about those as well. We'd love to hear how we can make it the best event ever.
Yeah, one other thing, the holidays will soon be upon us. And don't forget, we do have lots of geeky clothing and Christmas cards and decals that you can give as great gifts to your friends and family. So you can check those out at tantrumhouse.com or on our Etsy store. You can just search for Tantrum House on there as well. Make sure you get your orders in with plenty of time to get them shipped. And we do worldwide shipping on most of the items. So.
Cool. And as always, thank you guys so much for listening to us talk and ramble about all the games we've played and the games coming to Kickstarter and what's happening in Tantrum House in the upcoming weeks. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Oh, go ahead, Kevin.
Sorry, Melissa whispered in my ear and she said, one more thing. If you want to stay for the after party, we will be talking about Mandalorian Season 2,
yes!
Episode 2
oh, God,
in our spoiler episodes here.
I'm out. So I haven't caught up yet.
After the credits.
After the credits.
Okay.
Stay with us if you want to hear. So, sorry,
I haven't caught up yet, so I'm heading out with the people who are still on Season 1. Okay. Thanks so much. We'll see you guys next time.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Tantrum House Board Game Podcast.
If you liked any part of this at all, find and follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and tantrumhouse.com. Like us, share us, email us, call us, or send us a postcard to Tantrum House, 306 Barry Drive, that's B-A-R-R-Y, Greer, South Carolina, 29650.
All right. If you stayed with us this long, that means you are here waiting to hear our thoughts on episode 2 of season 2 of The Mandalorian. And
Passenger.
The Passenger, yeah.
Is that the name of the episode? The Passenger. So there's a lot of things to talk about in from this episode. First off, personally, I like this episode a lot more than episode 1.
Ooh. You're killing me on that one.
Nope.
Personally,
yeah,
I'm sliding this one into probably the bottom third of all episodes.
Like worse than the first episode?
Yeah.
Of season 2?
Yeah, and even if you go back to like season 1, like I don't know, this one was just, it was there. For me, it's always going to be, oh, it was the Ice Spider episode. And that's really about all I came away with. It didn't really seem to progress much. But I mean, that's fine that you liked it.
I don't like spiders. I was like cringing the whole time.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I was also slightly disappointed in some of the elements that were slightly unbelievable. Okay. Like if he had ripped his ship apart that much.
How did he just leave?
Yeah. How did he fix stuff for like, and maybe they cut it out all the stuff he fixed, but I mean, didn't seem like
did you see that ship at the end? It was barely making it to the next star system. I don't know. Ryan can probably give us a little bit more detail on that.
It was barely making it.
It's true. It was sputtering.
It's fun. Like all of these have been fun and yeah. I enjoyed it. I haven't sat through a single one and thought, oh my goodness, this is terrible. I thought it was fun and it was good. It was well done.
Let me give you one of the main reasons I felt it was better than episode 1. Episode 1 felt to me like a rehash of the Mudhorn episode.
It did.
It followed the same thing. There's this big monster in a cave that's going to come out and we're going to destroy it.
I can see that.
I just felt it was like a rehash of the same story. I was like, at least this one, I know there's, yes, he's probably going to survive, right? And blah, 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 blah. Yeah. But at least I was like, there's interesting things happening.
The Jawas got the egg. The sand people got the pearl. I mean, yeah.
Right. It was almost like a one for one. Whereas in the spider episode, I was like, yeah, maybe there wasn't a huge storyline going on, but at least it was engaging. And I didn't know exactly what was going to happen.
I do have to say, I saw a meme that Derek Funkhauser posted
on
Facebook.
Yes.
And it was a picture of Baby Yoda eating the eggs. And he was like, this is me on Christmas Day when my mom has made deviled eggs. And he's like, these are for the guests. And here's me secretly eating them all. I'm like, yep, that's totally what's happening. I did feel like if his entire point of taking the passenger was to help her get the eggs to the other planet, and the entire time he's eating them all, like, why did you not secure the eggs?
Right,
that was your one thing you needed to do this episode.
Secure the eggs, and then
you failed.
Did the mom not count the number of eggs? Like, she should know the number of eggs that were in that. That's one thing I was like.
She would have been furious.
Right?
Furious.
This is her, like.
I was furious.
This is her, like.
And it's not even my kid. Like. I would have, my kids would have been in so much trouble had they done something like that.
This is like her last of this kind of creature, right? Supposedly.
Yeah.
Yeah. It made Yoda a little less cute and more monstrous.
But he was kind of cute doing it.
He was cute doing it.
They tried to make him look cute doing it.
Like that last one where he peeks behind him and then he's like, oh.
Uh-oh, I don't know, but eating stuff is getting him into trouble.
Oh, yeah.
I mean...
And it was...
I struggled when he was eating the spider egg.
And then they all started...
I was totally fine with that.
If he left that spider egg alone, they would have never had any of that issues.
That's true. That is true. I think... Now, you have to go back, but if you watch the trailer, so I'm not spoiling anything here, there's a shot of Mando walking next to what we now know as the Frog Lady with this tank on her back. So they're making it somewhere. And in that same area is this mysterious Jedi-looking person, or kind of seems to be. So I'm curious to see, like, that has me, my interest piqued on what's coming next. I feel like maybe the story is going to keep going. Because this one, to me, felt like, okay, here's Boba Fett. And now we're not going to talk about Boba Fett at all. And we're just going to do something completely different. So now I'm hoping that the story starts to get more traction.
You felt like the story like went...
Sideways.
Yeah, I kind of... There was a moment where I was like, the pastor is going to be Boba Fett. And then it was some random frog person. Okay.
Yeah.
But she was kind of a cool character because most of the aliens we've seen so far, if they, like, are sentient, they're just, you know, a person in a suit, pretty much, you know? And this...
She's definitely a person in a suit.
Yeah, but she, like, ran like a frog. That is new.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's a little straying from, you know, this is just somebody cosplaying.
Right.
Yeah. Now, this episode will probably be my mother's favorite because she loves frogs. She collects frogs. It's not as bad now, but her downstairs bathroom used to have like 50 different frogs.
50? You're talking about 100, right? I used to count in there.
Yeah, she's gotten better. She's cleaned some of them out. But yeah, so I think she'll enjoy this one with the frog.
And it was a powder room, guys, which was only a toilet and a sink. And there was just 100 different frog paraphernalia in this on the walls all the way up to the ceiling. Anyway.
Does she like spiders?
No, I don't think she likes spiders.
It probably doesn't care one way or the other.
Yeah, not as bad. The funny thing about this episode was the frog lady leaving the ship in the middle of the night and finding
how did
a,
she know that was
yeah,
there?
Yeah, yeah. How did she find this?
Why would you wander off alone?
Yeah.
And like the timing of all that was just a little weird to me. And all of a sudden, like she's like, what is she doing with the eggs in this thing? She's trying to hatch them here? Because that does not make any sense.
Right.
Yeah. The Mandalorian's incompetence as a parental guardian kind of takes back some of the coolness factor for me. Because, like, wasn't he introduced as, like, the best bounty hunter in the parsec? He's super competent at, like, fighting and stuff. On the prison ship episode, he's almost like the Predator. Like, he comes out of nowhere and spooks them, takes them out.
But is that
and here he is. He can't foresee what this child that he already knows likes to eat everything. He can't foresee taking precautions to prevent him from eating the one thing he's supposed to get from point A to point B.
And why wasn't the mom
doesn't
just
seem
holding
like the best
eggs.
In the parts.
Right. That's what, yes. There was plenty of room in that cockpit for her to just have him there with them. No, they're rolling around in the back storage area.
But it's content. It's storyline.
It is, yeah. But...
Was there anything in there that was Easter egg, Ryan, that you saw in this episode? Like I've heard these spiders were like Star Wars, like
yeah, they showed up in a book originally, which I haven't read, but they were in Star Wars Rebels. At one point, they tried to make a like rebel outpost or something on one planet, and the two force sensitive characters have been able to influence animals up to this point, but they can't influence the Kinrax because they're like not force sensitive or something.
Speaking of that, also was one of the X-Wing guys from the original Star Wars?
One of them was Dave Filoni, the guy.
Yeah, I knew that.
The director.
The other guy. I felt like he looked so familiar.
I agree. I thought one of them was.
He looked like he might be. I tried to look him up and he's just a South Korean Canadian TV host and comedian. I didn't see any other Star Wars information on him.
Because we recognize him from other stuff. Then
it could be that. Was he one of the actual like fighters in one of the like Star Wars 4, 5, or 6? Because it looked like he had aged like, you know, 30, 40 years. So maybe not. Maybe he's been whatever.
I did see an article where they were pointing out that they named the prison ship, I guess.
Oh.
And they named it Bothan 5, and this is like the first callback to what the Bothans did, apparently, in Return of the Jedi. Many Bothans died to give them the Death Star plans. So, like, honoring the Bothans by naming a bunch of prison ships.
Wow.
So why were they after him? Was it just because he what, he had a bounty on his head for something?
He helped release somebody from the prison ship.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So that's all that it was.
Because I think it pinged his ship.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And they should have known, like, that one Commander Wolf or whatever in the one X-Wing was one of the two X-Wings that blew up the starport that he flew out
of. I do remember that.
Yep. Okay. Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah.
So was there any hint of what the next episode is going to be like?
Not at all.
Probably not the Frog Lady's coming back, I'm guessing.
Crash the ship somewhere. And
yeah. I feel like it's been rather episodic, just very thinly threaded together. And I'm not super pleased with that. But at least I do feel like this episode was better than the first one.
Oh.
Sorry, Dan.
That's okay. I like
it. May still be in my bottom third.
Yeah, I agree. It may be in the bottom for me too, but I felt it was better than episode one.
I just like the cowboy feeling of episode one. I thought it was cool. It took me back to the old school cowboys versus Indians type movies. And then, you know, there's always that unification around some cause and distrust of one another. I don't know. I think that's what kind of tugged at me. Mm. And then you throw in the coolness of the Mandalorian, and that was a lot of fun. I could see, you know, I don't know. In that last shot, as the Razor Crest is limping along, there's a planet off in the distance. I don't know if that's supposed to be, what was it, Trask, something like that?
Trask. Yeah.
So if that's his destination, my guess would be our next episode would be the arrival and hopefully reunification, and then these mysterious Jedi showing up.
I want to say that Trask is the name of a Star Wars character in the Knights of the Old Republic game, but I'm not absolutely sure.
But he's probably right since Ryan's talking about it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Trask Ulgo. So that's a callback if you like Knights of the Old Republic. So that's two Knights of the Old Republic references we've had in two episodes, Crate Dragon and Trask. Just in case
you feel like I need to go back and play this now.
Yeah. It's pretty great.
This did feel like a video game. I could totally see piloting the Razor Crest through dodging things and then and running
attacking the attack of the spiders.
Yep.
Trying to,
I'll skip that episode.
Can we do Lego Mandalorian? Because that would be cool.
Yes.
Yeah. With like going through some of the things.
I cannot. Okay. I have to say, I have played the original Star Wars Lego.
Yeah, me too.
I cannot play with Will.
Oh, well,
at all.
Why?
Because he shoots me and I fall to pieces every 5 minutes of the game.
Because you can play two player, right?
Yeah. But you could still shoot each other. You don't lose anything except for you have to take 3 seconds to disassemble and then reassemble.
Is he shooting you on purpose?
He says no, but he's not here to defend himself.
Interesting.
He was like, oh, sorry, I didn't mean to do that.
Have you played Lego Star Wars?
Sure, there's nothing else to shoot at in this room.
The neighbor kids come over, and I have a number of them for Xbox, but they like playing episode 2 where it starts off in the arena, I believe. Maybe it's episode 3. Anyway, it starts off in the Geonosis arena, and they have to work together to, like, do certain triggers and stuff, but they will not do it. So they'll spend like an hour and a half just, you know, banging their head against the wall. It's so frustrating to watch.
I do
it. But if they're having fun and it's keeping them busy, then...
Yeah, I mean, it makes it real easy to babysit, but still.
I do remember playing through that, and there was one scene where Melissa and I just couldn't get past it. Do you remember this stormtrooper throwing the stormtrooper in the pit, or not the pit, but the carbonite?
Oh, I don't.
Yeah, you had to, in order to get to the next level, you had to throw a stormtrooper. I think even with an arm or something like that, you had to take a stormtrooper with an arm and throw it in the carbonite pit.
They also will play episode one, and early on, you have to make a really high jump. And I tried to hint at them that, hey, Jar Jar jumps really well, but nobody wants to play Jar Jar.
So they'll spend don't blame them.
A lot of time trying to do it without Jar Jar. And they're like, here, hold on real quick. I'll switch to Jar Jar, make the jump. And then I'm like, okay, there you go. Yeah, nobody likes Jar Jar.
Yeah, I could see a Lego Mandalorian doing pretty well.
Yeah.
Yes.
That'd be cool. Sure.
Lego anything does really well. So
I want to see him make some more bounty hunting, actually collect more bounties, and I would like one of them to be Jar Jar Binks on the
ride. Oh,
that'd be cool.
It's
Speaking of Lego, back to Lego, the Lego holidays, the Star Wars is coming to Disney Plus, I think.
Mm-hmm. Holiday special.
Yes. The holiday special.
Really? I thought that was like never going to see the light of day again. That's interesting to me.
But this is the Lego version.
The Lego version.
Oh. Okay. Never
mind. The Lego.
Lego does really well.
Yeah,
with
I don't know
stuff,
if they're
so.
Like copying the old Star Wars holiday special or if they're making a new one.
New one.
I think it might be new.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Lego Star Wars stuff is all really tongue in cheek. It's pretty great.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to that. That should be out for this December. Have you listened or have you watched the behind the scenes yet, Mandalorian?
I haven't gotten
right.
Oh my goodness.
What?
Right, I keep telling you.
I've had the chance, I just haven't done it.
You will really like it.
At the very least, the episode that talks about how they do like the set and the shots and the technology behind it.
That one's pretty
amazing.
Cool.
That's pretty cool. I like the music one personally.
I need to watch more of them, but I went straight to that one and that's just super cool.
The puppets were interesting. There was one just on the puppetry. Melissa and I like that one. Anyway, Ryan, you have been.
I felt like the puppetry wasn't as good in this last episode. There were some times where I was like, he looks like a tall Roomba.
I do think I saw
from
that.
The spiders. And,
So I did make the observation that Baby Yoda, the child, is still wearing that like sack. He hasn't gotten any new clothes or anything.
That goes bad parenting, like we've talked about already.
Right. Well, everybody has to have their flaws, so. This is his.
I guess Mando's used to wearing the same thing all the time, so.
He doesn't even take his helmet off.
I mean, he's that old, so I don't see him growing bigger fast. Although he's eaten a lot recently, so maybe there'll be a growth spurt.
Exactly. Some people think there will be.
Oh, growth spurt?
Yeah.
Teenage Yoda?
I guess.
Teenage Yoda.
Although he's technically not Yoda, I understand.
That stuff always makes me wonder. Like, he wears the helmet all the time. He wears the same clothes. Can you imagine the reality of that when he's out on Tatooine and he's in these other places? I mean, it's like you watch some movie where it's like back medieval ages when they bathe like once a year and they're kissing and making out and you're like, really?
Well, if everybody smells, you don't notice.
I guess that's true, yeah.
But yeah, if he's a bounty hunter, surely some of these aliens can smell him, you know, upwind or whatever.
Wow.
Well, maybe we'll get back to a storyline here in the next few episodes.
Yeah. So looking forward to it.
Cool.
Thank you so much for staying on and listening through our rants and raves about the episode. Check us out next week. We will hopefully also talk about episode 3. We'll see you then.
Bye.
Bye.